Welcome to Vellante Elevate, where we explore what the world of payments will look like tomorrow by talking to the experts who are building it today. Your host for each episode, Vellante's Chief Marketing Officer, Vinay Prabhakar. Ready to take your payments IQ to new heights? Let's get started.
Welcome everyone to Vellante Elevate. Today, our episode is called Behind the Payment Rails, Why Infrastructure Matters. Okay, so most people don't get too excited when they hear the term payments infrastructure. But when it comes to payments, the architecture of a bank's processing infrastructure can really be the ace card in the winning hand, right? Or the one that loses the game. With real-time payments, ISO 20022, and all these different drivers of modernization, it is a high-stakes game. And joining us today is the payments industry lead at Red Hat, Ramon Villarreal. Ramon, I hope I got your last name right there. Yeah. Who's going to help us get behind the rails and call the right place. Ramon, welcome to Vellante Elevate.
Thank you, Vinay.
It's a pleasure to have you on. Before we get started, I see in the corner of the screen, I don't know if the folks on video can see it, there's a little bit of red there. You want to just show us what that is?
Sure. First thing is, as it is, this is basically my red hat.
I got. So you do have a red hat?
We do have a red hat. This is the official red hat.
Okay, all right. And it looks like, I won't ask you to put it on, don't worry. It looks like a lovely red hat. How do I get a red hat?
Well, there is normally two methods. The way that you get this red hat is through working for Red Hat, normally.
Oh, okay.
But also we have a set of red hats that we give away in most of the events that we attend. So if you ever see a Red Hat booth in any of the events, like Cybers or others, just come over. We can help you with one.
All right. The next time we're at one of those, we will definitely pick up a red hat. Okay, good. Well, now Ramon, we certainly know you work at Red Hat, but tell us a little bit about your background, what you've been doing at Red Hat, how long you've been there, and also, you've had a really interesting background before that in terms of the different kinds of organizations that you work for. So please tell us and our audience about your background.
Yeah, sure. And again, thank you for having me, Vinay. So, I've been in Red Hat for the last 5 years when I got there, Red Hat. And since then, since my entry times, I've been mainly focusing in what is the payments business. Just to give you a little bit more background, I've been in the banking industry for around 22 years. And the last 15 years of those have been mainly in the payments space. I've worked with organizations such as VocaLink, Santander Bank, other big banks in the UK that I'm not allowed to say, and some other central banks that some of them I have security clearance for, so can't mention. Payments has been basically my main area of focus for a long while. And in Red Hat, what I do is run the payments business. Basically, what I do is I engage with organizations that is doing payments modernization. I help them with experiences, but also to acquire some of the patterns that we are seeing, and I connect them. That is another part of the work that we do within my team.
Interesting. So, in terms of your background, you have it's a little unusual and really perfect for what you do, in that you have worked for directly many of the different types of players in the ecosystem. Right.
Yes.
Sounds like banks, central banks, infrastructure providers. I think you may even have a consultancy in fintech in your background. So it gives you, a 360 degree view of the situation, of the world of payments. And hopefully today, we can get a feel for what that 360 view is. Maybe what we'll do is start out with you at Red Hat. You work a lot with clients, customers, right? Customers of Red Hat of various kinds, as you've described. Tell us about the different types of clients that you spend time with, please.
Yeah, I would say if I were to divide that, being a payments person, I'm a numbers person. So if I were to divide it by percentile, I would say 40% or 50% of my customers tend to be banks, normally tier one banks. I spend around I would say a good 20% of my time with central banks, another 10 to 15 with central infrastructures, and the rest is just other type of organizations that are working with different capabilities within the payments market. So I do engage with acquirers, I do engage with credit card providers, I do engage with a lot of different organizations in that space. I think, as you said, with my background is a little bit heterogeneous. So it has helped me being able to understand what are the requirements of these organizations. I to give you an example, I actually worked with one of the biggest retailers in the world building their their cash machines for a while.
Okay, so you work on the retailer, the corporate treasury side as well. So the bank's customer in that case.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because when you have that view, you can actually understand what are the different requirements that these organizations have, but also the priorities. Because at the end of the day, that is the best way to actually deliver the best infrastructure for these systems. You know, you need to understand what are the different performance requirements and capabilities that they are going to need.
No, that's certainly true. And it's interesting the way you've described the tiering or the percentile split, right? As you say, you're a numbers guy, so are we of customers. And at Volante, actually, we have a similar split in that we do serve many parts of the ecosystem. The majority of our customers are banks and financial institutions, right? Regulated banks and financial institutions. We do have central banks as customers as well, some corporate treasuries, fintechs, and so on. And we use the term broadly financial business, right, to describe these organizations, because the term financial institution is a little narrow, right? In the US, the term bank is even narrower because credit unions, for example, don't consider themselves banks, as you probably know, right? They have different terminology. But increasingly, and particularly in Europe with PSD2 and open banking and payment service providers, there are many kinds of entities, right, that can provide payment services that are not necessarily banks, may not even be financial institutions, but certainly are financial businesses in that they provide financial and payment services to their customers. So given that the biggest slice of the pie is really banks and financial institutions, and the biggest slice of that pie is tier one banks, right? The big players, we all know who they are. They have complex needs. Talk to us about what is driving payments modernization of these banks. Why are they modernizing in the first place?
Yeah, and you kind of mentioned it there. You know, you hinted at some of the challenges that these organizations are facing. I mean, when you look at, for example, the biggest banks in the world, these are organizations that have been delivering payment services for years and years. They have a huge quantity of legacy system accumulated and capabilities. And even, I dare say, some of them a lot of technical debt that are actually putting a lot of pressure in the performance and the service.
Did you say, sorry, I just want to make sure, did you say technical depth or technical debt?
Technical debt, sorry.
Debt. Okay, yeah, and just for our audience, could you briefly define technical debt?
Of course, technical debt, really, in a really simple way, is basically the accumulated cost of the legacy and the old capabilities that a company tends to accumulate because they are not upgrading constantly. In an IT environment, when we talk about technical debt, is we needed to do this upgrade. We couldn't do it. Well, what is the debt that we are accumulating for that upgrade? And it's a value measured way to calculate where are we in terms of the evolution of our software.
Got it. Understood. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. So with all of these organizations having, as I said, a lot of technical debt, they are having to compete with a lot of new entrants in the market. That is one of their biggest pain points. The new entrants are leaner, are faster, are designed to deliver capabilities much more efficiently. For them to be able to compete, they need to change the paradigm and the way that they deliver those capabilities. At the same time, their customers are asking for newer capabilities. Customers want to be able to execute transactions without cash. Customers want to be able to get immediate reporting on what is happening with their money. Customer want to be able to get a response really quickly when there is potentially a fraud risk or something like that. they want capabilities to be more efficiency. So there is a big customer expectation of these new capabilities. On the other side, you have the regulator, which is actually asking for new potential expansion in levels of security, but also in levels of quality of service and business continuity, because you cannot lose the performance of a payment system. So all of these pressures, together with the technical debt, together with climate change impact, for example, are things that are actually putting a lot of pressure in financial services institutions or businesses, as you call them, that are actually providing this type of service into the market. Modernization is key because they need to keep up to speed with the level of change in the market. And in payments, within the last 5 years, the level of change is accelerating exponentially.
And that change, and I think I touched upon a couple of the keywords, right? Real-time payments, ISO 20022, which I'm sure we'll get into. But maybe we can stay a little bit on that concept of techno debt and just flesh out the landscape a little bit. For tier one banks, which we'll define, I guess, as everybody has a different measure, you know, banks 100, 200 billion plus, right, in assets, something like that, 250. Presumably, they are under similar external pressures as other organizations, smaller organizations. So similar regulatory compliance, but maybe at a higher level because they have more capital requirements, right? Maybe similar external pressures because they serve the same customers. Would you say that a tier one bank typically has more technical debt than a smaller organization, or it's kind of even across the board?
I would say there is a bigger accumulated technical debt potential for a bigger bank, okay? Because these are organizations that have been in the market for a long while. And the truth is, every single organization in the market will accumulate technical debt. You know, that is not something that I haven't met any organization in my 24 years of career that doesn't have a level of technical debt.
Without it, okay.
Yeah, so it's just how much it is and how much penalty that applies into your operations. What I can say is, yes, definitely the bigger banks tend to have a bigger potential of having technical debt. At the same time, I actually like to, go a little bit against what you said. I feel with my experience with the bigger banks, they tend to have a lot more pressure from the regulator, and the expectations from the customers in terms of capabilities are higher. So it's not the same. There's a higher pressure because, and if you think about the regulatory side, it's just related to the level of impact that institution will have into the specific market. And let me expand on that. At the end of the day, a payment system is related to the business continuity to the country. Okay, the quality of a payment system and the business continuity of a payment system can affect the economy of a country. And the failure of one of those are one of the biggest impacts. And the bigger a financial institution is, the bigger the potential impact in case of a failure of that organization for a country. So therefore, the pressure is higher.
That makes sense. They're systemically important, then the regulators are going to pay a lot more attention to them. Let's get into some of those regulatory compliance measures. Can you give a few examples of, if a CIO wakes up this morning, what are the regulatory pressures that they are thinking about? What are the specific regulations maybe that are top of mind?
Yeah, I mean, it will come from different markets and different areas. As you mentioned before, the changes on ISO 20022 in SWIFT, which will affect the operation of their cross-border payments. Not only SWIFT, but if you go to other countries, like for example, UK, CHAPS is actually requiring a change into ISO 20022. I don't remember right now what is the date. A lot of systems are changing the format of the message following that. At the same time, you have regulations around operational resiliency, for example, operational resiliency in the UK, DORA in Europe, or other regulations around that aspect in Australia or even in the United States that may be upcoming. At the same time, you have the traditional capabilities. For example, PCI DSS in terms of security of the data of the customer, GDPR, all of those regulators will have a huge impact into the operations of those organizations. But the bigger impacts tend to be in payments. Why? Because it's the core of the operation, the transaction, the movement of the money goes through the payment system. So when you look at all of those regulations, the biggest area of impact tend to be around the payment system.
One of the ones you mentioned, which our audience may be a little less familiar with, I'm not sure, is DORA, Operational Resiliency. Can you expand on that one, please?
Yeah, the Digital Operational Resiliency Act, or DORA, as it's known by the European Union, is a set of rules that are related to the health of the operations of the systems. They pertain to not only the quality of service and the business continuity of the financial services institution, but they get into what is the endemic risk of having those operations located into a single cloud. They are looking into the potential concentration risk of having multiple organizations working with a single provider of infrastructure. And they are looking also into other different areas, which is more around the quality of the service, the performance, the reliability of the system. It's actually quite a thorough set of regulation that they are not all released just yet, but they are going to, they're having quite a wide impact into banks around across Europe. I spent time with several CIOs, and I would say around 70% of my conversation is around DORA.
And in your role, is that about explaining DORA to your clients and the ramifications thereof? Is it about helping them with compliance, I guess, with DORA? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, from our point of view, we are expected to understand the impact of DORA because from the point of view of how we can help them achieve the compliance to those systems. We do understand that DORA is a quite an expansive set of regulations that are not only related to the payments or the cloud infrastructure. It's related to a lot of functionality, and it's also related to people and processes. So, but from the point of view of the cloud infrastructure, from the point of view of the payments infrastructure, what we look to do is look at those regulations, the regulatory change that DORA is bringing, and see how we can help the customer address the challenges that the regulator is asking them to deliver to. Mainly, the work that we do around that is to help them set up patterns or way of the building deployment models for their systems in which they can guarantee the compliance to the requirements of the regulator.
So with DORA, we have a, is it similar to GDPR in that it is a European regulation?
Yes.
But it probably applies to any organization doing business in Europe, which in effect, right, makes it a global regulation. So even if you're a US headquartered bank, if you're doing anything with payments in Europe, then presumably you are subject to it also, or is it really only for European domicile?
It tends to be related on whether when you run the operations, and given the requirements of GDPR that the data of the customer shouldn't leave the European Union,
correct?
Therefore,
true.
Their operations need to be run in Europe, right?
Yeah. So no, that makes a lot of sense.
There is an expansive side to that. Having said that, DORA is actually having another effect in the industry, which is acting as an example, okay? Regulations like DORA are being looked after by regulators in Latin America, in North America, even in Asia, as an example of the type of patterns that they need to implement for guaranteeing the operational resiliency in the system. It's if you compare it with other type of regulation, if you look, for example, at PSD2, PSD2 was a big example to follow. But a lot of countries in Latin America and in North America and actually in Asia as the pattern to follow in terms of open banking implementation, you know?
Correct. Yeah.
So it has the same effect. Europe has the tendency of regulating quickly, and then it drives adoption into other geos based on
that. That's right. So eventually it becomes global in one form or the other. Let's switch to a little bit now of the how in terms of the response to all these pressures, right? Compliance, customer pressures, and so on. And, you know, we take it for granted that having the right infrastructure is important. Yeah, you should have the right infrastructure. But maybe what you can do is just briefly cover why is the right infrastructure is important? You know, what are the consequences of the wrong infrastructure in brief? And then we'll talk about the approach, you know, to getting the right infrastructure.
Sure. I normally like to characterize that question in the simplest way that I can. It's all about three areas of focus, okay? The first area of focus that we need to pay attention in terms of the infrastructure and where the work is key in terms of the payments infrastructure is around business continuity. The quality of the business infrastructure will be related one-to-one to what is going to be the continuity of the business and the capability of actually running, being able to deliver, to run 24/7, never have a failure, et cetera, et cetera.
Which is particularly important in the area of real-time payments, right?
So yeah, and particularly important in real-time payments. It's really important for Swift, for connectivities. It is really important not only for that, but if you think about high-value payments, the guarantee of delivery is really important when you're executing those really high-value processes that tend to run in batch. You cannot fail in those processes. It permeates all the industry, okay? Credit card transactions, you don't want your credit card transactions to fail, you know? You want to be able to go to the coffee place and buy your coffee and not to have to wait half an hour for the credit card to go through, right? So it's absolutely related to all of those operations. On the other side, we get into performance. You know, being able to provide the response in the right timelines, it's really important. And performance of payments related to real-time payment, but also to credit card transactions, is extremely important because we want the payments to become seamless. We want the payments to get abstracted from everything else. So the infrastructure is really important for the performance. And on the third aspect, this is more from the point of view of the business, the ability to change quickly is key and is related to the way that you build your infrastructure. So in the industry, we have the term blue-green testing, which is all about being able to roll out new features really quickly for a selected group of people. Okay. That capability allows you to actually being able to evolve your capabilities quickly, along with some other capabilities of automations, et cetera, et cetera. So being able to bring quickly new products into the market is also related in a high level into your payments infrastructure.
Okay, so that's very helpful in terms of understanding why the right infrastructure is important. Now let's talk about the approach, okay? And historically, I guess, depending which decade you look at, banks, particularly larger banks, have had a few different options, right, at the table. They can, they could at any time have chosen to build from scratch, which many of them have chosen to do, right? But then what happens is, coming back to your earlier point, they build up their own in-house technical debt, right? Instead of the other option, which is, well, you buy, right? And hopefully you buy from the right provider, in which case, in a way, you're outsourcing your technical debt, right? You're outsourcing it to a provider so that they will keep upgrading systems and keep reducing the technical debt. Yeah. But increasingly what we're seeing, I'm curious to know if this is the case for you, is it's no longer either or, right? With the technologies we have at our disposal today, APIs, real-time processing, streaming, you know, distributed federated data and all that, there is the possibility of buy and build or build and buy. So tell us a bit about that. Does that resonate with you? Is that what you're seeing? And how do these buy and build or build and buy patterns work?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, traditionally, we used to have the two options and a lot of organizations used to look into buy versus build. That was the traditional way of doing things. And it's something that it tended to swing around. It was like a pendulum that we spent a lot of time going through. some organizations decided to buy everything, and then for, and then the trend became into build something all the time. As you say, and this is something that I'm seeing more and more in the last maybe 2 years, a lot of organizations are looking into modular systems, systems that are built to actually being able to pick and choose the capabilities that you need. So it's not only about buying, it's not only about building. You could potentially start building the capabilities that you need to take ownership internally because you want the IP, because you want to take ownership of your workflow, because you, a lot of different reasons, because you have a really amazing piece of software that you developed recently and you don't want to lose that capability because you're buying something new. And at the same time, you can go and say, well, I am buying this, but I want, so I'm building this, but I want to buy this new functionality. So the idea of having a modular framework, I don't know how, that's the type of name that I'm giving it, that leverages the capabilities of APIs, of microsystems, of service mesh, of other functionalities, of streams, is actually something that I'm seeing more and more being adopted as a new standard in the industry. And it's quite common, especially with the tier one banks, although I'm seeing more and more adoption into the next level of banks recently, just for the flexibility.
No, that's true. And it is often the case that the behavior of the tier one banks from a technology perspective then filters through, right, to other organizations, because they are so important that vendors, fintechs and so forth, also adapt their services to what tier one banks need, and then they can take them downstream as well. And thank you. That's a very helpful understanding of the buy and build dynamic that's happening today. I think a key part of that in terms of the components, right, that you can buy and adapt and integrate is cloud, mm-hmm. and particularly payments as a service, which, as you know, at Belante, we are very big on. We are seeing the majority of our new customer implementations going on PaaS or payments as a service. What, give us your thoughts on the role of cloud and payment services for tier one banks in that build and buy dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite interesting. Cloud is something that it's the enabler of all those capabilities that we are seeing. Cloud technologies and what we call those capabilities that were developed for the cloud, API, microservices, streaming, other functionalities, are basically what is driving that modularity of the systems. And I cannot lie, it's basically the core of my work. At the end of the day, what we provide is a hybrid cloud solution that allows for that flexibility around multiple clouds. At the same time, I would say that we are seeing, and I'm seeing more and more, the adoption of PaaS capabilities, or payments as a service capabilities, as you mentioned it. However, it depends on the tier of the organization. You can see more of payments as a service capability in a lower tier, in a tier two or tier three bank, taking over all the processing. Whereas in bigger banks, you will see it working in a specific business areas that is more targeted, that they have to deliver that capability really, really quickly, and it has to be extremely efficient. Whereas those organizations, when they big, like their traditional big payments hub that they take ownership with, they will take modules of that as a service capability to enhance what they are building themselves. So there's actually a lot of synergies of those capability. And as the organization grow, you have all of these different capabilities permeating different areas. With cloud, we see a huge adoption of cloud capabilities across the payments in the last few years in the market. And I think it's just going to start growing more when we start including functionalities such as AI. Although other systems in that space, even when you get into crypto, it's something that it's built to be native in a cloud functionality.
That's right. Now, particularly AI, it runs in the cloud, right? It needs vast amounts of distributed data in order to work, which is both a fundamental requirement as well as something that perhaps, you know, that scares people as well. But there's no question that the AI tsunami is here, right?
Yeah, and we're going to have
AI everywhere. Yeah, AI everywhere all the time, and that, you know, is in terms of the infrastructure that will enable AI is probably a whole another session, you know, that, that we need to do. We are close to out of time, unfortunately, Ramon. Let me close with one question to you, which is, if you had just a few minutes with a CIO, CTO of a bank who's responsible for a payments modernization program, what advice would you give them?
There is many, many advices that I normally give them. So actually, normally my conversation with them is, it tends to be all about getting lessons learned from other implementation. I think the first thing that I normally say is a payments system implementation is not a single project. It's not a simple project. It is quite a complicated endeavor. So you need a lot of experience to do that type of work. And a strong team of people that actually have experience in delivering that type of project is going to be key. The other thing is explore, test, and evaluate what is going to be better to deliver your capabilities. But also don't lose the perspective just by the features that the system is bringing. Think beyond the features, think how are you going to be able to maintain that business continuity? How are you going to be able to ensure the performance and how you're going to be able to actually bring change faster? It's not only about the latest feature of the functionality, it's about the having that end-to-end platform-driven payment system that is going to be able to solve all the use cases, and it's never going to have a big failure. It's about having an end-to-end solution that looks to deliver to all the requirements that you're getting. And I think that is my main area of focus.
And also probably if I can draw out one theme from that is, don't leave performance resiliency as an afterthought, right?
No, I mean,
a lot of times people focus on the functionality, but they don't focus on the NFRs. And then, you know, you've seen the trouble that causes, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That used to be my work. And I don't wish anybody to have to spend all the nights that I had to spend at that time.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, Ramon, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today. We've been talking to Ramon Villarreal, who's the payments industry lead at Red Hat, about payment rails, behind the payment rails, why infrastructure matters. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks to our audience for listening in, and look forward to seeing you again on another episode of Volante Update.
Thank you very much.
Hope you enjoyed that episode of Volante Elevate, where we explore what the world of payments will look like tomorrow by talking to the experts who are building it today. Subscribe to Volante Elevate on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Podbean, or visit us on www.volantetech.com/elevate.